The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Judy Joy Jones Show. You are listening to the grand opening performed and composed by Belgium classical composer Stefan Maillars. And I thought the grand opening was a perfect opening for our very special guest, Gloria Allred. She is actually one of the most well-known female attorneys in the world, and we are really honored to have her on, and she's going to be bringing us up on everything that she's working on. And we are very honored as well to have our co-host, who is Miss Rita Graham. And Rita Graham is starring in a musical coming out called We Are Kings. And she was a Ray Charles, Ray Lett. And she also edited my book, and she's just a wonderful person. Hi, Rita. How are you doing?
Hi, Joy. Hi.
We're so glad you're with us for this very special occasion. Gloria's bio just is mind-boggling. She is probably the biggest advocate, at least that I personally know of, for women all over the world and gay rights. She was on our show in 2008 discussing gay rights. So I'm going to go ahead and bring her up right now. Hello, Gloria.
Hi. Yes, hi.
How are you?
Nice to be with you. Thank you for inviting me. Just fine, thank you.
We are so honored to have you, and I'd like to introduce you to Rita Graham. She's going to help us co-host.
Hi, Rita. Nice to meet you, and congratulations on your show.
Oh, thank you. I'm so thrilled to hear your voice. Talk, honey. I want to hear everything you have to say.
Okay. Well, we are the leading women's rights law firm in the nation. We've done more women's rights cases over the last 38 years and with more success, we think, than any other private law firm in the nation. We've won hundreds of millions of dollars for victims just in the last 10 years. So multiply that over 38 and see what we've done. Recently, we're in the news because in November, we had filed a lawsuit against the University of Connecticut in federal court in Hartford on behalf of rape and sexual assault victims who were students or former students of University of Connecticut, UConn. And we had alleged that they had discriminated against our clients on the basis of their gender and that UConn had retaliated against them in violation of Title IX. That's a federal law which prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex and guarantees equal educational opportunity to students at educational institutions that receive federal funds, such as the University of Connecticut. So we sought damages according to proof of trial, and last Friday we were very happy to announce the settlement of our lawsuit on behalf of our five named clients, and the settlement requires UConn to compensate our clients in the total of $1,285,000. And
congratulations.
Thank you very much, and we do appreciate UConn's constructive role and their approach, which allowed a settlement to occur at this early stage in the litigation process. And I might add that in our joint press statement with UConn, UConn did acknowledge our client's role in inspiring very important public conversation regarding the issue of sexual violence in colleges. And we believe that our clients played a vital role in UConn strengthening its policies and its procedures for addressing sexual violence.
Absolutely. I remember reading your book several times, Fight Back and Win, Gloria. And I thought to myself, without people fighting for our rights like you're doing, and we all really need to do, they don't change. They just keep going down the same path, but now they'll change.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. It does take women fighting for their rights in order to win change, because nobody gives us change. It has to be won. So we're very proud of our courageous clients, because they came forward to assert their rights, and they want to eliminate sexual and gender-based harassment and violence. They want to prevent its reoccurrence. They want to support survivors, and they want to hold perpetrators accountable. And UConn has also indicated its firm commitment to these goals. So we're very encouraged that UConn has taken important steps to make UConn the safest possible campus and to support survivors, which UConn has acknowledged is a goal that they share with our clients.
Oh, that's so good. I really applaud your work because everything that you've ever done has just been an ongoing, courageous, I think, example for us, especially as women, to see that there are things possible that can change that whole picture. I grew up in Detroit in the 60s, and violations was a way of life. It was just, you just had to be, know which way to go and get away from situations that would be harmful, would put you in a compromising position. And I'm so glad to see that women are now seeing that they do have rights, and that it's possible to prevail in a climate where men can just you walking down the street and some guy can just grab you and he has no consequences at all. He's just so there now. There it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's very important what you said, because it is true. There's still going to be, and there's always going to be, violence against women. The question is, what are women going to do about that, and what are the consequences for the men who commit the violence against women? Because we're all about empowering women, empowering victims, and making sure that they know that there are options for victims so that they can become survivors, so that they can become fighters for change. And also, just recently, I was representing some women, two victims of what's called the Bolder Than Most Rapist in San Diego.
Yes.
I don't know if you heard about that one.
Yes.
He had been convicted, Alvin Ray Carls, of 4 counts of rape, of 6 counts of burglary with intent to commit a felony, 2 counts of robbery. He was sentenced to 50 years, but one of the victims learned last year, to her shock and horror, that he was scheduled to be released early after having served only half of the sentence. And then after that fact became public, the DA's office filed a petition to civilly commit him to a state mental hospital rather than release him. The trial was just scheduled for this week, but in another surprise move, the rapist made a decision last week not to proceed to trial, instead to admit the allegations of the petition that he is a sexually violent predator. And so we did a news conference to react to decision, and the victims broke out. And it's just so, again, out of, it took some courage to stand up and to speak out. And because they did, and because they went public, then the DA's office, we believe, who hadn't known about the early release, filed to get him civilly committed. And the court, by the way, had found there was probable cause to believe that he was a sexually violent predator. And then they were willing to testify at his trial again. You know, we believe in truth in sentencing. And we believe that when they were told he'd be there for 50 years, that they had a right to expect he would be there for 50 years and not released after only 25. Well, one of them, he had been indicted for, in fact, soliciting the murder of one of our clients. So it was, you know, a very scary thing for her that he might be released. And emotionally, they were preparing themselves for the difficult moment when they would testify again, face him in court. But now that he's admitted it, it's definitely good news for the victims. And but the, here's the downside is he still has the right next year to bring a petition to be released and argue that he's no longer a sexually violent predator. And then if the court agrees, he could be released at that time. So we're going to monitor his status. We have asked to be directly notified if he tries to be released from the mental hospital. And we're just going to stay on top of this. And again, I just commend the courage of the victims, and I'm glad they came to me and that we were able to assist.
Absolutely. It takes so much courage to step out when the whole society says stay quiet and just be nice. But when you're being violated, and especially as a woman, there comes a moment when we just have to let go of all of that and stand up for our rights. Reading your book over and over again, I keep reading it because to me it's so simply written, Gloria, that even I can understand it, number one. I don't need anything, but, you know, no dictionary. I understand it, and it just gives me courage. I was taught to growing up that I was kind of to be a doormat, right? And then I'm reading this, and I go, wait a minute. No, this isn't the way it was. So I'm really grateful. Everybody should grab that book.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I did write Fight Back and Win, you know, for people who are not lawyers, to help to empower women to know, to talk about some of my famous cases. But the point is, at the end of each case is empowerment lessons. How can what happened there help you in your life? You know, these are life lessons about, you know, so that women know what they can do instead of, you know, turning inward and, you know, becoming an alcoholic, going on drugs, trying to, you know, tranquilize yourself and forget about it, you know, self-hurting. And take that same rage you feel about your life and injustice, and, you know, there are positive and constructive options that women can choose from to do something, and it makes them feel so much better, and it helps to win change. We're doing a lot. We're traveling all over the country. We are representing, for example, groups of adult survivors of child sexual abuse. And in some cases, they have been, you know, sexually abused when they were children and by teachers or administrators at their school. In some cases, the perpetrators have never been, they've never been arrested. They've never been prosecuted. And in some cases, they've even been kind of promoted at the school where they were, where they committed the abuse. Even where the time limit has passed, are you still there?
I'm listening.
Okay, it was hard to hit something on the line. But even where the time limit, called the statute of limitations, has passed, then we're still able often to be able to, you know, let the school know they do have responsibility and have the school know that they need to do justice for the victims of child sexual abuse. So, you know, we were able to achieve what we believe was a just settlement, as much just as possible under the circumstances, involving Horace Mann School in New York for 25 adult survivors of child sexual abuse. And we represented many adult survivors at other schools as well. So we're just happy that these survivors are standing up, whether they're women or men, and that they're finding out what their legal rights are and able to get as much justice as possible under the circumstances. Because, for example, in some cases, the survivors have had to go through years of therapy, have had to pay huge medical bills because of the abuse that they've suffered by someone they trusted. You know, and so often were able to recover, you know, that what they've had to pay out in therapy bills and something for their pain and suffering. So they know that, you know, that they have been, that it's been worthwhile for them to stand up and speak out and to seek justice. And so even if he can't be any, you know, it's too late to prosecute him still civilly, there's often something we can do. And some cases they are getting prosecuted. We just had a case involving Mr. Kloman, who taught at the paternity school. And he sexually abused a number of women. And ultimately, he was just recently arrested in the last few years, prosecuted, and even though he's in his 70s, he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison for what he did.
Wow. I read that. Yes, yes, and that's amazing because it shows that justice can be done at any time, and you don't, you know, you can bring it out of the closet on Gloria and find justice at the right moment, no matter what. You can at least try, and oftentimes it works.
Well, exactly, and that's why I say know your rights, be informed of what your options are, And so that's a way of empowering women. And we also represent men who are victims of child sexual abuse, of course, as well. We don't discriminate. And, you know what your rights are, because often there's more that you can do than you realize. You know, often society doesn't want women or doesn't want victims to know their rights because then they're afraid they might exercise them. But we're all about informing them and helping them because, you know, it really, I've had so many people write to me, you know what, it's really changed my life, Gloria, that I was able to get a settlement or a judgment in a court of law because now I feel stronger. I was on the defensive when I was being victimized, but now I've been on the offensive. I know there's something I can do. And I've been able to have my voice and be able to speak out and not have to suffer in silence and be able to at least win as much justice as the system can afford me, whether that's monetary justice, whether that's justice in the criminal justice system. Sometimes it's both. There's something that they can do, and that's exciting. It's empowering. And then they become role models in their own family and their workplaces and elsewhere for being able to stand up and speak out and win.
Been at the forefront of this awareness because I remember a time when we had no, there wasn't anybody you could even tell without being, the onus that it brought about in the lives of African-American women and when I was growing up. Was just amazing. There was no place you could go, and there was no one you could even talk to except other girls who had gone through, you know, similar experiences. So, I mean, thank you for your efforts and your courage and for carrying that banner and just getting out in the forefront with your boxer gloves on and, you know, bopping them in the nose every way you can.
Well, thank you. And you know what? We like right now we represent six African American mothers whose sons were sexually abused in Grand Rapids, Michigan, by their female teacher. And
female teacher.
Wow. Yes, exactly. And we, you know, this woman who sexually abused these teenage boys is now in prison, teacher, for what she did. And we're representing the mothers and the sons civilly because, you know, these mothers, they had a right to expect the teachers would act in an appropriate way, help their kids to learn, but not to take advantage of their vulnerability in the way that teacher did. So I'm proud of these moms, many of them single moms, most of them single moms. They've done their best to raise their sons in the right way. And, you know, it was just devastating what happened as far as they were concerned to their son. So, you know, whether it's Michigan or other places, you know, I'm willing to go wherever, and we often co-counsel with other attorneys in other states to try to win as much justice as possible because my clients are very courageous. The least I can do is support them if wherever I can.
I remember listening to Gloria on the radio, KABC. I think it was KABC, and you were – not Amber Price, somebody that was in Italy and had been murdered.
Yes.
The guy was stealing her baby, and I can't remember what his name was, but you went over there all the time. You were just determined to help.
Yeah, Carlo.
Yeah,
that was horrendous. That was an international, that was a man who kidnapped his own child in violation of a court order, and he took her to Italy, and the mom went to get the child back because she had, you know, she had a right to not have the court order violated. And essentially what happened is he killed her. And I went to Italy to try to get the child back because obviously I guess he thought by killing her that somehow then, you know, he would get away with it and then he would have custody of the child. He took the child from California to Italy. But I pursued him for about 8 years. Ultimately, he was convicted of abducting the child, even though it was his own child. Can't do that in violation of court order. Then he was put on trial for murdering her, finally. And he was on the stand to testify in Italy. And then he said to the judge, after he finished trashing the mother of the child whom he had killed, can I just take a minute? And he took a minute, and all of a sudden, he dropped dead on the sand, on the witness stand. So that was an unbelievable thing, but all I can say is we were able to get the child back to the United States. It was an incredible ending, but, you know, this is Carlo Venturi was his name. You know, the point is we must not allow violation of court orders. You know, fathers cannot take, you know, the law into their own hands. There are going to be consequences for them, and that's why we have to stand up to these kidnappers, to these killers, to these rapists, to these men who sexually harass women. We have to stand up to all of them because we need them to know the women are not going to live in fear anymore. We're not going to be doormats, as you said. We are going to fight back. We are going to win.
Fight back and win. And one of the things I remember in the book was if you can't fight at that moment for whatever reasons, there will be a moment when it'll come forth. That, you know, there are times that you can't grab and do it, but there will be that time, that moment, right?
Well, that's true.
If you're,
and,
if you're still alive.
That is very
if
true.
You're still alive.
That
if
is very true.
If you haven't run into a killer. If you even, you
true,
if you haven't run into somebody, and that's the fear that I had every time some guy grabbed me, is he going to, because I was real cute, you know? And so I was like, is this guy going to kill me? You know, what, that's the, I mean, I can't even, I mean, you know, you hate to go back there. You hate to, you know, bring up all those feelings, but the fear is overwhelming. What is, what does he intend to do? What's he going to do to me?
Well,
and like
exactly.
You said, who are you
going
to go to? Because they said, well, you're African-American, right, Reardon, so nobody would believe you anyway. I mean, what
exactly.
would you do? That was.
We didn't have anybody to tell, you know, sit around.
Well,
and
now,
tell
now
our,
you
our
do.
Girlfriend.
Now you do. And
yeah,
that's the thing. Now there are rape crisis centers. Now there are, you know, domestic violence shelters for women. But, you know, fear is the weapon that wrongdoers use to keep women down and to keep minorities down. And then once we help women to break out of that fear by giving them information, by giving them choices, by helping them to understand that there are ways in the system they can fight back, then the fear becomes a fear. The perpetrator is the one in fear, the wrongdoer, the criminal, and not the victim anymore. That was shifting the fear away from the victim and onto the wrongdoer, and that's where it belongs. But I will say, you know, so many women are living in fear. Again, we have to find... They have to help them break out of that fear. And it's just, it's so, you see the difference in a woman's face. You see the difference in her life. You see it in the posture. You hear it in her voice when she's able to break out of the fear. But I know as women, we've all experienced that fear. But people say to me, Gloria, how can you be so fearless? Well, the answer is very simple. We pay a high price when we live in fear. We may pay a price for breaking out of the fear, but it's not as great a price ordinarily as the price we pay for living in fear.
Right.
So that's my message. You know, try to be as fearless as you can in your life. By the way, in many cases, the women are ashamed. That's why they're afraid to do anything. They blame themselves, you know, if they're sexually abused or they're raped. They live in, you know, feel shame. They don't want anybody to know. We do a lot of confidential settlements, so nobody even knows, except the lawyer, except us as a lawyer, what we have been able to do for them. And, you know, they don't ever have to have anyone else know, except the wrongdoer, of course. And so often their family doesn't even know they did anything about it. So there are ways, you know, to take care of the fears and the concern and still win justice. That's my message. And people can go to GloriaAllred.com. They can find me, how to contact me. And, you know, we're just really so excited and proud of young women, older women, minority women, all kinds of women wanting to know their rights, how to be free of discrimination, how to be free of sexual harassment and employment. And, you know, they're fighting back, and they're winning big. I mean, we're winning some really terrific settlements and judgments for our clients, and we're so proud of
that's them. Wonderful. Yay, that is great news, because, you know, that's one thing that might deter them from doing it again. If the judgment is big enough, huh, Gloria? They'll remember that.
That's true. You know, consequences, the judgment against them, yes, that is a great deterrent factor. And for large corporations, for example, that allow sexual harassment in their workplace, don't do anything. Maybe they protect the harasser against the victim. You know, we're teaching those corporations a lesson. You're going to have to pay a lot of money to the victims, in some cases millions of dollars, for the sexual harassment that you have permitted to occur in your workplace. And that's something the corporations understand is their bottom line. Free of sexual harassment and to protect people who may be victims, than to have to pay out large settlements and or judgments later to the victims. And so, yes, this is the kind of language they understand is having to pay out the big bucks.
Pay out the big bucks. Well, how do you pick your cases for the people out there that are listening? I guess it's just a matter of what at the moment in time, but go ahead and call, go ahead and write, or try to get your case and forward, right, Gloria?
Yes, well, we can, you know, we have to be selective. We can't take every case but we're happy to review what people send us and tell them if we can help them. And if we can, you know, sometimes we can give them a referral of who can help them. We are mainly doing plaintiff's employment cases, which is sexual harassment in employment, race discrimination, age, physical handicap, national origin, sexual orientation, AIDS cases. Those are the kind of wrongful termination of key employees. That's what we're doing. We're doing a lot of relationship, like, you know, rich, powerful, famous men who have hurt the women in their lives. They break up with them. They throw them out like they use Coke cans. And, you know, they break promises to them. You know, we're representing a lot of women who've been hurt by athletes, by people in the entertainment industry, and a lot others, you know, big businessmen. And, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting work. And, you know, and child and abuse and victims of child sexual abuse. But we're happy to look at cases again. If we can help them, we'll tell them on what basis. We look at many factors. What's the probability of success? Is it within our area of expertise? Where is it? What's the evidence? But we're happy to look at these things. We don't charge for consultation, and we're looking at them and seeing if we can help, because we think access to justice is very important.
And it can be confidential, as you said. It's not always going to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So people out
that's
there,
an important
it's not,
point.
You're not going
I'm
to
glad
be on
you
the
made
news,
it.
So to speak.
No, well, that's an important point. Any consultation is completely confidential. And, you know, we don't even say who contacts us, let alone what we've discussed with them. That is our ethical duty to keep it confidential. And, you know, we never will say anything publicly unless both the clients and us agree, unless we're retained and we agree that that's in the client's best interest. Sometimes clients want us to make it public, and we don't, because we don't think it's the client in the client's best interest. But definitely we only do that, I would say, in 1% of all of our cases, and only then if there is an agreement between the client and us that this is important, that it's an issue of public interest and importance, and it's going to help them in some way. If not, we will not ever speak about it.
Do you have time to do other things in your life? Or, you know, is everything you do pretty well geared around your work, Gloria? I mean, do you work out, or do you, you know, do any kind of small things? You know, I think of you as just working around the clock.
Well, thank you. Well, I actually, I do work constantly. I have a confessed workaholic. I'm leaving on Sunday. I have a case in New Jersey representing 14 women, and from there I'm going to New York and then on to Connecticut on a case that I have there, and then back to New York and then on to Grand Rapids, Michigan for a case. So I am working a lot, but
yeah.
You know, I have a wonderful daughter who's an attorney. I have a granddaughter who is going. It was just finished her second year of law school, and she'll become an attorney next year. So we'll have three generations of women lawyers. And
congratulations! That's great.
Wow,
I love working. It's my duty to do women's rights and minority rights, and I want to do it every moment that I can. I love doing it. I have a passion for justice, and you know, I just want to do it as long as I live, and then if there is a hereafter from there as well, if I can find a way to do it from there.
But having other attorneys in the family makes for great conversations. I mean, you guys must have wonderful things to talk about, and you must have wonderful things to impart to these young people to help them understand what your work has been about and what a pioneer you've been, and for them to carry on that incredible, courageous, and because it's really fighting that whole macho thing that men have gotten away with all over the world since time began.
Well, that's true, and that's the difference is now that women say, you know what, we have rights, and we're going to assert them. This is just actually, I think it was just this week, is 1 year ago is when I filed the first sexual harassment case against the then mayor of San Diego, Mayor Filner, who had sexually harassed, remember that one? Who had sexually harassed my client.
Case. He was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a he sexually harassed Irene, my client McCormick, who was his communications director. And we filed a lawsuit and held a big news conference. That set off an explosion, kind of a tsunami of women like you've never seen in this country, where every day after that, after we filed a lawsuit against him, yet another woman came forward saying that he had also sexually harassed her. Until it was about 19 women. 19 days, every day another woman, including a retired rear admiral. I mean, amazing thing. And then as a mediation of our loss in our lawsuit, he had to step down as mayor of San Diego. And then ultimately got prosecuted, and we got a great settlement. I think it was $150,000 for Irene, who had been so courageous. And so, you know, we really made history with that case and also inspired and empowered other women to come forward and assert their rights. So that was so exciting to see that, the women's movement is alive and well, and women know that breaking out of their silence, they really can help to win change, which we did in San Diego.
You sure did. I remember that, too. Every day somebody would come all that time, and they couldn't tell, but because the other one told, they told, and it was like this beautiful ripple effect. Wow, that's
exactly.
How it works.
Well, they were all scared. See, he was powerful, and he was there. He was the boss. His name was on the bottom of their check, you know, and they were there by virtue of his favor and so forth. And, you know, they probably all knew among themselves that that this guy was abusing different ones at different times or suspected so. And probably nobody ever really addressed it. But, you know, they were afraid.
Yeah,
well,
until the first one came forth.
Right.
Exactly. Came forth, filed a lawsuit, and we went public. And, you know, we allege that he tried to kiss her, that he talked about wanting to see her naked, that, you know, what he did was just so disgusting. Here she is. She's a professional. She had formerly been a reporter and an editor of one of the San Diego's largest newspapers. And, you know, she just wanted to be able to do her job. And, you know, to have to run the gauntlet of sexual harassment on a regular basis, that is just, you can't do your job. You're placed in a no-win situation where, you know, if you say no, then he's going to be upset with you. And if you say yes, then that's going to interfere with your ability to do the job. And so that's what's wrong with sexual harassment, that it interferes with the employees to be able to do their job. It interferes with their right to equal employment opportunity. That's why it's against the law. That's why it's considered a form of discrimination. And that's why the employer in many places is going to have to pay if they allow that to exist, because we have a right to a workplace free of sexual harassment.
I was
sure
going to ask you about that case, that case in Grand Rapids. Didn't the school system, and I guess maybe you haven't determined this yet or you can't say, but it seems to me that if somebody is doing, you know, being abusive to kids in school, junior high school or high school, someone in the school knows about that. Somebody's got to know about that. I mean, he's
well, somebody. I agree with you. Somebody may, you know, somebody may know, or somebody may want to not know, even though they do know. But you know, they cannot go on. You know, you have to protect kids. That's your first duty. I formerly was a teacher for 6.5 years, and I was also a credentialed high school principal. And, you know, if you're not going to be dedicated to kids, you don't belong there. You can't abuse their trust. You can't abuse the trust of their parents to entrust you with their kids. It's wrong, and there have to be consequences for those who allow it.
Those are a lot. And we are allowing it by not coming forth out of fear. So our fears have got to be put aside, knowing that once we step forward, it's like such a freedom, huh, Gloria? No matter the end result, but you're finding, you're showing us that the end result can be you win. I'm sorry, I think there's some kind of ambulance coming through the door here. It's just on the street, but it's a little bit loud. But that's what excites me, is because you do win these cases, and that means that it's very doable. All these times we thought it wasn't doable, but it is. All the times we've been harassed sexually and abused, and it does. It just totally breaks you down to where you can't do your job. It's impossible.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And sometimes it affects, you know, it affects marriages. It affects, you know, because then the husband thinks, well, maybe she asked for it, which she didn't, you know what I mean? And it can affect the whole family. And that's why it's wrong. And the arrogance of, you know, the sense of entitlement of a boss to be able to do that, his, you know, the arrogance of him to think that he's somehow entitled because the woman is working there, you know, to sexually harass her, to do whatever he is, to grab, you know, in some cases, I've had cases where men, male employers, supervisors will grab a woman's breast, they'll pinch her butt, they'll, I even had cases where they will force a woman to watch pornography with them, where they'll masturbate in front of them, where they will, enter their office and rape them. It's unbelievable what goes on, and they, the woman's not going to do anything about it. And then they get a letter from me, from Gloria Allred, and they go into shock. Like, well, what do they think? You know, women know what they're going to, what they need to do. They know who to contact, and a lot of them are going to do something about it.
No, it's like those that priest, or those priests that in your book Fight Back and Win that were raping the young woman in the motel, and didn't you get a DNA? And one of them was the father of her child.
Yeah, I had Joy, like I think it might have been the first pre-sexual abuse case that was well-known in the country way back in the 80s involving Rita Mia, who was sexually abused by 7 Catholic priests and had a baby by one of them. And, and I did file that lawsuit, and all of a sudden those 7 priests who abused her suddenly disappeared from their parishes. But anyway, that was, I pursued them, and ultimately we found one of the priests who was in hiding. We got an order that he take a DNA test to see if he was the father of the child. And, in fact, he was the father after the test was done. So, and ultimately, I pursued that case against the Catholic Church for 23 years. We found it was a cover-up. And ultimately, they did have to settle with our client. And so, we were so proud of Rita that she came forward. And she set off the explosion. Originally, people thought, oh, priests could not possibly, abuse a parishioner. And we proved, and then others after, many came forward afterwards saying that they were abused by priests. We proved that you can win justice. And we just pursued it and pursued it and pursued it. We even got the law changed in California. And ultimately, we want as much justice as was possible under the circumstances. But I will say, the Catholic Archdiocese of Los Angeles, they resisted for a long time. And so ultimately, they couldn't resist anymore, and they had to settle.
They had to settle. 23 years it took to settle that. I didn't know it took that long.
But that was one of the, maybe the first one ever. And so they fought it. They got the case thrown out, statute of limitations saying that she had waited too long, and at that time the Court of Appeals said it wasn't foreseeable that priests would sexually abuse a parishioner. That's how bad it was in the 80s, that it was, the victims weren't believed. And then we lobbied to get the law changed so that she could refile her case, and we did get it changed, and we did refile her lawsuit. Then we began to litigate it, and ultimately they then settled. So, I just take a vitamin pill every day, and I keep going. A lot of cases will settle right after we send a letter. It doesn't take 23 years. Some cases after a lawsuit is filed. Some cases before trial, some after trial. But we just go for as long as short as it takes. And, you know, now the defendants know that, you know what, we will fight, we will litigate. We've litigated up to the California Supreme Court where we won the right to marry for our clients, same-sex couple in California. We will go for as long as it takes. So it's best to try to resolve these things early. In most cases, do resolve early. But, you know, defendants know, you know, with our firm, we'll just go the distance if it's necessary. So don't, you know, you might as well try to resolve it early, because otherwise it's going to be a long and an ugly battle.
Wow.
I'm still vibing on seven priests. That's taking that picture out of my mind.
Seven priests, my God. Oh.
I know. And,
go, I mean,
and our client was 16 years old when it started, and, you know, her goal was to become a nun. She had gone to the church every day. She was helping to clean the candelabras and everything, and she just, you know, her parents trusted her there. The Catholic parents, you know, they thought, oh, well, she'll be safe in the church. She'll be safe with priests. And that's very disturbing when Catholic parents are going to be so, you know, so betrayed in the trust that they have placed in their church.
Oh, my. She was going to be a nut.
You know,
so
that,
she was totally
that goes
open.
Back. That goes back to that whole idea, though. I've seen this with a lot of religions where the parishioners and the people who belong to that religion and believe that that religion is God and that God is that religion, and that the priests and I've seen this in all churches and, you know, in every denomination, where the man who is the minister, the preacher, or whatever, the priest is considered holy, and that whatever he says to do, especially to a young child, comes from a divine source, which I think makes it doubly more compelling an argument against these people being able to get away with this. Because people believe that this is a holy man, and what he says for me to do is the right thing, which is a tremendous, I think, component in the whole idea of allowing these children to be exposed without supervision to a leader.
Yeah, without supervision, that's the word for it, Rita. The parents trust the priest. Why shouldn't they? Because that's what, you know, they're taught to do, and then they're violated. And so they should well pay. And the fact that it took y'all that long, but you stayed with it, things aren't solved in the next moment, you know, like they are on TV. They take a long time sometimes. But it's got to be that way, huh, Gloria? We can't give up.
Yeah, some do. But as I say, I would say most of our cases settle early, you know, within a relatively short period of time. And they don't take that long, because now that, you know, defendants know that we will go for all those years, they realize that they better resolve it early in many cases, because otherwise they're just going to, you know, they're going to have to deal with me for many years to come. So
they don't want to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Your reputation has definitely preceded you, so would they get a letter from you?
It's good for my clients. In the case of the Catholic Church, you know, I said, you know, her father was truly a father, because he was a priest. The child, I said, was a child of the church, because the child was conceived in the church rectory. And, they wanted to deny it, and ultimately they couldn't deny it any longer. But this is just an example of some of the cases we do. We do a lot of also economic discrimination against women. You know, I have to say, the case of women being charged more for their dry cleaning than men were charged. We got them to change their policy. We got a case of against Saks Fifth Avenue where they were charging women more for their alterations to women's clothing than they were charging men. And we got them to change their policy because, you know, costing women a lot more. Why? It's bad enough that women earn less than men because they're women. They shouldn't have to pay more because they are, you know, because they're women. In the everyday thing, we've done cases involving haircuts, where women are charged more for their haircut than men are charged for their haircut, where it involves the same time, expertise, and everything. Why should women have to pay more? It's really wrong. And we've done cases of pregnancy discrimination. We have a lot of pregnancy discrimination cases. I have one
you
right
had
now.
Amber Fry, the movie star, right?
Amber Fry was the key prosecution witness in the Scott Peterson murder case.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the one that got pregnant on the set in your book of a movie or TV.
Oh, you're thinking of Hunter Tylo. Yeah. Hunter Tylo.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter Tylo was one of the stars of The Bold and the Beautiful, one of the soaps on television, and she was able to get a role, get her into a contract for a role on Melrose Place, which was a hit television show, and then she became pregnant. And then she informed her employer, and they said, well, then you can't have the role. They terminated her from the role, they said, because they said that's a material change in your appearance. Well, we said, even though the contract says you can't have a material change in appearance, that can't mean pregnancy, because you can't discriminate on account of the fact that she got pregnant. And so they said they thought they could. We said you couldn't. We sued. A lot of people said you'll never win. We went to trial. We did win a $5 million verdict and for Hunter Tylo. So, you cannot discriminate against an employee, whether she's an actress or anyone else, just simply because you're pregnant. And often, like a lot of pregnancy discrimination cases, you know, a woman, I have a case right now, which I'm not going to say who the person is that we're against, because right now I'm handling it confidentially, but it's a famous person who discriminated against her nanny. And, when the nanny became pregnant. And, it's really hard because the nanny could still do her job taking care of the children. And, for her to be then fired at that time, we all know it's hard for pregnant women to get another job. And so a woman is very vulnerable at that time, and she needs the money. That's why she's working. And she's especially going to need it if she's pregnant and about to, I'm going to give birth soon. So because of all the expenses involved. So we are very, very adamant about prohibiting pregnancy discrimination or imposing consequences against employers who still engage in it. If we have rights, doesn't mean that people are not discriminating. Employers are still discriminating. The difference is, though, we're making them pay for it to the victims.
That's it. And the employment factor or the economic factor, I understand that women make up like 95% of the poor on Earth, which I don't know, that seems awfully high, but then on the other hand, maybe not, which means everything you're saying is, why should we pay more for a haircut? What is that? We don't make as much.
Well, for alterations to our clothing, or for alterations to our clothing, or for dry cleaning.
I sure wish all of this had been possible when I was getting battered around with all the things and everything that I did I paid more for and had all sorts of abuse and all sorts of things that I just had to rationalize and say, well, I'm still alive.
No, that's all right.
Well,
in some of these cases, women can just go to small claims court. They don't even have to have an attorney. Like for discrimination and dry cleaning and that, haircuts and that kind of thing. You can go to small claims court and file a claim. You don't need to hire an attorney. And in many cases, you will recover money if you can prove that, in fact, you were charged more just simply because of your gender. So I want women to know that. Not in every case. You have to even consult an attorney. Well, you can consult one, but then you can do it yourself, and then you can keep it all, whatever you want.
That would be a great thing. Now, if you go to the small claims, do you just go alone and fill out the papers, and then you have to appear alone?
Yes.
And then
it varies state by state, but often the victim, often the small claims laws are in many states that you can't have an attorney, but neither can the other side have an attorney. So you're suing the business. You're filing the papers against the business, and then the person who discriminated against you has to come. They'll have their day in court. You'll give your side, and you may recover. So
I did that against a promoter. Yeah, I had a promoter for that booked a whole. Just really took up 3 or 4 weeks. I forget how long
the booking was for. And then when he went under, I went to small claims court for the and sued the estate.
Because you didn't get your salary, and I got paid too
because they, you know, they were breaking down everything that this guy had.
Congratulations!
So.
That's great.
Congratulations!
You know you're
right. I felt like da 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 da. I felt really powerful when that happened.
That is wonderful.
So that's great.
Yeah,
it is wonderful. Now there is a limit. There's a limit on what you can get in small claims court. You can get more if you have a lawyer, but, you know, for certain items under the limit, some cases it's $2,500, some places it's $10,000. It depends on your state. But, you know, then you get to keep it all, and, you know, usually it's a faster process, and if you file a lawsuit and go through the court system. But I would say, you know, it's very exciting to see women who have, you know, been empowered, know their rights, and are doing something about them. Because you're making change not only for yourself but for other people, because you're teaching a lesson to the other side. And it's going to be very costly to commit an injustice against a woman. Maybe don't do it again.
There you go. I love that. It's going to be costly. Don't commit an injustice against women. I think I'll tell everybody.
Exactly.
It bothers me. It's going to be costly.
You know, and in some cases, you can. In some cases, if it's a crime, you can have them prosecuted. But in addition, you can sue them for the wrong that they have done to you. So you have two systems that are working for you, the criminal justice system and the civil system. Let's say you're a rape victim. Well, the DA and the police, they may decide that they're not going to prosecute. Whether or not they prosecute, you can still sue the rapist or others who assist them. And in some cases, as I said, I started out with a college case. I'm so proud of the young women. They speak truth to power. Some of them are still in their colleges because in their colleges have a duty to afford certain rights once a rape is reported to them. And they have to tell women their rights. They have to hold their own hearing, even if there is no criminal case that is filed, to determine, you know, if in fact what is alleged occurred, and then to impose, let's say, punishments on the college student who raped or sexually assaulted the woman. And maybe that means expelling them. Maybe it means disciplining them. Maybe it means, you know, informing the rape victim of their rights and getting them counseling. There are a lot of rights that people have that they need to know about. And especially when, you know, a woman is still employed, she's often afraid, or if she's still a student, she's afraid of doing anything. But that's why it's good, even while you're there, to get legal advice, because while you're there, there is often still something you can do about it.
Especially college students. More, I'm reading about these young college students that are continuously raped, and they're not getting any help from the odds are that they're going to be raped. I did not know all this, that, you know, they were that vulnerable.
Exactly, on college campuses. And, you know, there's a lot of alcohol, too, on college campuses. And there's a lot of people, a lot of guys these days putting date rape drugs in the drinks of the women. And, you know, the women wake up, they're kind of not sure what happened, and, they just find themselves naked lying in a bed. Why are their clothes on the side? You know, and in some cases with some colleges, for everything up because they don't want the scandal, because they're afraid parents will be afraid to send their kids to that college, or they are afraid that their alumni will stop giving donations to the college if they think there's a lot of crime on campus and rapes and sexual assaults and violence. So sometimes colleges will try to hush things up. I want to say I'm very proud of President Obama that he spoke out early this year in January about sexual assault on campus.
Yeah, I saw that.
I've been doing these cases for several years, but I'm so glad that it broke out. And then he established a high-level task force and cabinet members to deal with it, something I've never seen him do that on any other, you know, in such a widespread way on any other subject. And so I'm glad that he's highlighting this problem, and I'm glad the college students, you know, are being willing to speak truth to power and are asserting their rights. So we're going to different states. We had a case against Occidental in California. We have the UConn case. We have cases against other colleges in other states, Boise State in Idaho. And we're there to support victims and help them, you know, to win as much justice as is possible under the circumstances.
You know, it looks like we
in a
have someone that
I
would like
in
to ask a question.
Yes.
Let me bring them up and see.
Oh,
would that be all right, Gloria?
Yes.
Oh,
okay.
I was just going to say, until you bring somebody up, I worked in a nightclub that was very close to a campus in the Midwest. And there were, I've never seen so many absolute, total, I mean, just abandoning of common sense and drug use in my life. I was shocked. They were wild and crazy. It was a wild and crazy party in that club every night. And I don't know who was who. I was too young to know that and really, you know, really understand dynamics and all of that. But I had never seen such a wild, crazy stuff. They had a swimming pool in the back of the club, and they would go, everybody would take their clothes off and jump in the pool. It was crazy.
Wow, they were awesome. Hello, caller. Are you there? Caller 954.
Yes. Hi, Judy. This is Joan.
Who is this?
Joan.
Oh, Joan. Joan, how are you? Joan Cartwright.
Hi. Hi, Rita. Hi, Gloria. Good to be here with you.
Hi, Joan.
And this is definitely an issue that women need to be talking about across the board. But I want to go back to something that was said a little earlier about people in school knowing that teachers mm-hmm. are molesting. I worked in a school for 3 months, and I was the first person to be laid off when the budget cuts came, and I thought it was because I had a master's degree and was getting paid more, but that wasn't the case. The dean of students was a male, and every time I had trouble with one boy, I would send him out of the class, and he would go to the dean, and the dean would send him right back. And this must have happened about 5 or 6 times. 4 years. 4 years. After I was laid off, I read a newspaper article that this same dean of students had been brought up on charges of 30 counts of child molestation.
Oh, my God.
Including
yeah.
the boy that I kept putting out of my classroom. Mm. This situation on this planet, and it's not just, you know, the United States, it's not just the Middle East, it's not just Nigeria. The situation between men and women on this planet is drastic. I'm not saying all men are bad. My father is one of the kindest men that I have ever met. But I've had 4 husbands. 3 of them were abusive. So that's 3 out of 4. And
well,
who is teaching boys how to relate to females? It
mm-hmm.
cannot be the fathers. It's not the fathers, and the mothers don't know, and the religious are the worst. I'm in Atlanta, and Eddie Long paid $25 million reparation to 4 boys that he
mm-hmm.
seduced. Do mm-hmm. you know that the church insurance paid that, and he is still in the pulpit?
Gee.
Now,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that, you know, you raise the caller raises so many important issues. One has to do with domestic violence against women. And, you know, the subordination of women, when a relationship should be an equal partnership, when one person is subordinated, and usually that's the woman, and she's treated like a second-class citizen as an object, not as a human being, as an equal partner, then that woman is going to be vulnerable. Then she is going to potentially be abused, beaten, attacked, bruised, sometimes bones broken, and sometimes killed. And we have to have serious consequences for domestic violence. I just got off Fox News Channel with Greta Van Susteren, and, you know, we're talking about Ray Rice, the NFL player, who apparently knocked his fiancée unconscious in an elevator. It was captured on video. The only consequence he's going to have to pay is he was suspended from two games by the NFL commissioner, and so he's going to counseling, and so his criminal record even will be expunged. Now, that is absolutely outrageous. Because violence against women matters. You know, hurting women should carry serious consequences for those who hurt them. And we still have a long, long way to go in that regard. Anyway, I want to say it's been a real pleasure being with you. I thank you so much for inviting me. I invite everybody to contact me just by going to my website, GloriaAllred.com. You'll see all the videos and statements of things I've been doing. You'll find out how to contact me if you have a case you want to discuss. And, Joy, thank you so much for all the great work you do on the show. And also,
thank you, Gloria.
Thank you for being a co-host. I wish you continued success in your entertaining career.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And thank you for all your hard work and your courage and dedication. It's amazing. Thank you.
Keep on
keeping
on.
It is amazing. Really, thank you.
Fight
all the women, thank you. Thank you, Gloria.
All right, thank you.
Best wishes on all the cases you're working on right now.
All right, thanks. Call me anytime. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, Rita Graham, thank you so much for the co-hosting and being a part of this historic woman known as Gloria Allred, the most well-known female attorney on the earth. And it sounds like she's got a couple more coming in the family there I know her daughter's the attorney, and then the other one's studying, and it's just amazing.
Well, I enjoyed every moment of it, and I enjoyed Dr. Cartwright's really amazing testimony about what had gone on in that school. I mean, because, you know, Joan?
And she, wait a minute, Joan, are you still there? Wait, are you there, Joan? Let me.
I'm just working on the doctorate. I'm not a doctor yet.
I'm anticipating. I'm anticipating that moment. I'm jumping ahead of time is out of joint, like Shakespeare said. You know, so we can jump ahead if we choose. But I think it's just amazing because institutions have long supported whatever their key male. People, employees, and partners, or whoever—they've supported whatever the male chooses to do or is about, always against the woman's interest. What happens to women? It's like they don't really care. You know,
Joan, the fact that all those you threw him out of the classroom, you threw him out of the classroom, and then you were just going by that absolute total knowingness that this was not going on in your classroom, and he brought him right back in, and so you had to deal with it, you had to deal with all that time, all that energy, and I just am so grateful that we are all choosing to be on this show, and we are brave enough to come forward and talk about these things. And, of course, Gloria Allred, one case was 23 years, so she doesn't ever stop. And I think that is my lesson. It doesn't happen overnight. This is an ongoing, everyday occurrence for us to speak up and speak out. And I'm going to try more and more of it. It's a little disconcerting at times because some people will threaten you and all of this, but... And lure that, I'm going to carry that book, Fight Back and Win, by Gloria Allred. And I hope everybody out there grabs it as quickly as they can and downloads it. Because have you read that, Joan, Fight Back and Win?
No, I haven't. But I want to just say one thing. I believe that many of the men that are abusing women have been abused by a man. You understand what I'm saying? They've been abused by a man or by a woman who was abused by a man. The best oppressors are the oppressed.
Right.
And I think that's what's going on in Gaza right now, that they're killing children in the street. The Jews have become so defensive about anti-Semitism that now they are striking out. You know, I think, Rita, you were telling me about the man who was bragging about his daughter could load a gun, break a gun down.
Break it down. One of those fancy Russian rifles. Break it down and put it back together in 18 seconds. And that's how he introduced her. You know, he said, this is Lassen this Moscow, my daughter, whatever her name was. And she can take
that. If it happened that just like the books and the movies, love just takes care of everything, well, love to me is standing up for your rights and speaking out and going beyond fear. To me, that is love, putting the walk to the talk. And that's what I'm interested in seeing, is that we take all of the talk and start putting it into some action, because that's when it really makes a difference in my life, and then if I do it for y'all. But I want to thank you both, and I'm going to go ahead and end this show, because I feel like the most important thing that we got today is literally, again, just some simple words: fight back and win, and don't take discrimination of any kind. That's Gloria's own words. She said that's how the Holocaust began, because people let themselves be discriminated against. So thank you.
Okay, and keep up the work you're doing, and congratulations. I hope your film comes to fruition. I just watched a movie with Sharon Stone. I watched two movies with Sharon Stone, where she was victimized, and the other one where she was, I can't think of the word that I'm exposing, and a violent man. And she seems to run through her films, that she's always showing how women are victimized, how people are victimized by insane men. There are crazy women too, but the bulk of the victims are women, and the bulk of the perpetrators are men. And there is, I just want to end with this.
Okay.
The Ho'opono. Ho'oponopono. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you.
I love you, Joan Cartwright.
These four statements can heal this world if we meditate on them. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. We need to meditate on that, because the world is in serious trouble.
Yeah, we need to meditate. I agree, and I want everybody out there to know this is Joan Cartwright, Rita Graham, and Judy Joy Jones, and we love you, and thank you for listening today. And
love
thank you, Ms. Gloria Allred. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun: Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.